let the little children come to me, baptizing all nations. And there's no fine print that says excluding little children and infants and little ones.
Pastor Chris Roseborough speaking at this year's Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.
You'll note then that the man-made baptismal theology that sounds so reasonable and rational because it turns baptism into a symbol, into an ordinance, into a work, that what it's doing is running against the very will of God by keeping children away from the Word of God for them in the waters of baptism.
You can listen to Chris Roseborough's presentation, Making the Case for Infant Baptism, on a recording of the 2018 Making the Case Conferences. We'll send it to you for a year-end tax-deductible contribution of $300. Learn more at issuesetc.org or call 618-223-8385.
I'm not talking about someone's little personal version of evolution. It's not the way science works. You don't have your own personal periodic table of elements.
I trust and wait on Him who does not lie. I can't trust myself. I can't trust my pastor. I can't trust the Senate or President Trump or my Uber driver. But I can trust God and His Word.
What they're actually saying is that Muslims are only able to react to what America does and what other people do. There's never any possibility they might do things for reasons of their own.
This is a total arbitrary decision to create a God in your own image that happens to be a mystical idea, but not a lot of comfort when you get news in the hospital that you have a week to live.
In about 20 minutes, we'll play Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week. We play four soundbites. You listen, and then you give us a call, and you cast your vote for one of them to be Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week. We need to know who you are, where you're listening, and especially why you're voting for the soundbite you're voting for when we play Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week. In the meantime, we're going to go through Issues Etc. listener comment line. A couple days ago, we had, I think we slated it as responding to listener email in the comment line, but we never got to any comments. We just dealt with email, so we left the comments unresponded to, which we will do here for about the next 10 minutes. So let's begin with a comment about progressive school teachers.
This is Jason listening in North Carolina. I was listening to Teresa Farnon's program. She had mentioned about Christian teachers in public school. My experience with quote-unquote Christian teachers in the public school is that they're all progressive Christians, and I wouldn't want my kids influenced by them any more than the public schools themselves. But maybe there is Christian teachers that are teaching in public school, but all the ones that I know of, they're progressive Christians. So that's just my comment. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. I think it's a valid concern. First of all, let's kind of define what a progressive Christian is. I think I do have a bead on what the caller means by progressive Christian. It would be a Christian that is probably more progressive than they are Christian in terms of what they believe, teach, and confess. It is a Christian whose beliefs are shaped more by the culture and by the kind of spirit of the age than by Holy Scripture or the teachings of the church. So these are many. There are entire denominations and church bodies that we could classify as progressively Christian. And that doesn't mean that every person who is a member of such a church body or one of its congregations necessarily buys into all of that. But by and large, you can see entire church bodies that have hitched their wagon to the wandering star of popular culture and really, to be quite honest, the sexual revolution. They have bought into the sexual revolution as an authority in and of itself that supersedes even Scripture, which is why you can see in the last quarter of a decade, the truly radical, the truly fundamental changes in the teachings and practices of these denominations. They have rejected traditional morality in almost every sense, unless it comes to, say, feeding the poor. That they keep. But when it comes to anything else, especially sexual ethics, they have bought into either an entirely amoral view of sex, if not an immoral view of sexual behavior. So we're talking about the United Church of Christ. We're talking about the Episcopal Church, the United Methodist Church to a lesser degree on paper. They're a little more traditional than they are progressive. The Evangelical Lutheran Church in America. We could name a few others that are smaller and probably less well known. So to take two issues about what a progressive Christian public school teacher, if they buy into that kind of culture first, that culture is always upstream of theology. If they buy into that, what are you going to get from them that you wouldn't get from just an ordinary progressive who isn't a Christian, progressive atheist, on the issue of sexual morality, let's say sex before marriage? They might say, well, you know, don't do it, kids, because you could screw up your college career. Or young ladies, you could find yourself without the prospects of a career. But they're not going to tell you it's wrong, much less that it's sinful. They'll say, use a condom. That's what they'll say. They'll say, you can do this. In fact, we encourage you to do so, but be careful. Practice safe sex, as they used to say. Doesn't that sound quaint? That sounds so quaint. Practice safe sex. Or on the issue of abortion, they would say, that's entirely your choice. Or on the issue of gender, they're going to buy in entirely into, they may be personally uncomfortable with this idea. They may not be completely up to speed, but they're not going to fight against any policies in the public school that would require them to call a he a she or a she a he. In spite of what they may personally think about that situation, they're going to buy into the policy and probably enforce it. So what are you going to get from a progressive Christian public school teacher that you're not just going to get from a progressive public school teacher? You're going to get exactly the same thing. And it's a valid concern. Let me say, though, that I do know a handful of public school teachers who are Christians that are deeply concerned about what's happening in the public school, what they may even be required to do against their conscience in the public school. And they are either counting the days until they can, and keeping their heads down until they can retire, or some of them are thinking about doing something else. But they're not happy about it. I would not classify them as progressive Christians. And I think you probably find a lot of Christians there in the classrooms who are just trying to keep their mouths shut and their heads down and trying to keep their jobs, because they know that sooner or later, those jobs will be on the line.
Hi, this is Jackie. I'm just listening to Todd talk to a woman about sexual integrity, and I did not catch her name, and I have to get out of the car now. But if you could send me her name, I'm going through this with my 14-year-old right now. I would love to be able to get her book or something. Thank you.
The name you're looking for there is Heather Ruesch, and it is spelled, Jeff, correct me if I'm wrong, it is R-U-E-S-C-H, pronounced Ruesch. Did I get the spelling correct? Thank you very much. Heather Ruesch, and we had her on to talk about this kind of sexual integrity. Very good. And the book that she has written, I think you'll find beneficial, called Sexual Mentality by Heather Ruesch, and it's published by Concordia Publishing House. Go to their website and search for it, cph.org, or you can just give them a call and ask for Sexual Mentality by Heather Ruesch, 1-800-325-3040, 1-800-325-3040.
Okay, I listen to your shows through the web. I download them to my Kindle, and I listen to them, you know, a number of times. And you change the little control bar when you play a recording, and I don't know what you did, but it makes it so much easier, because I also end up trying to take notes from these things, which a lot of times almost turns into a transcript. But you just have so much more control, you know, when I try and go back and pick up stuff that I've missed, you know, when I'm trying to take notes. I just got to tell you, this is really nice, and makes it a lot easier. So whoever did this, a big thanks to them. That's it. Bye.
Well, I'm glad you're happy with the change. It was entirely unintentional. I made the change, actually, and not because I was trying to make things easier on anybody, but simply because the plugin that we were using at our website in order to put that little player on the page stopped working. And when it stopped working, we had someone replace it with a different plugin, which gave us that different look and that kind of long slider that you can use. actually, even before we made the change, depending on what browser you were using, you had that slider you could use, but many people didn't. They just had a page that opened up and began to play. So happy to have accommodated you. And I know there are a lot of people who listen the same way. They like to be able to scrub back, as they say, in the audio and listen to something again or figure out what the time index on something is. I use it a lot when we're going through sound bites of the week. It gives me a little time cue there, as well as allowing me to scrub back and forth in the audio.
Hello, Pastor Wilkin. I'm calling to ask if you could give a reason or if there is an upcoming Issues, Etc. 24 going to happen again. That was a neat yearly event that I was curious to find out why it is not seemingly happening anymore. Thank you, and have a blessed Advent.
Well, this requires a little institutional memory, which I have, but my memory is so bad when it comes to these things. I'm inevitably wrong. When did we start doing Issues, Etc. 24, which is, by the way, exactly what it sounds like. We did continuous live broadcasting for 24 straight hours. I think the first year we did it, we started at something like 3 in the afternoon, which was very unwise. We started our regular showtime and went all the way to 3 o'clock the next day. Over the years that we did it, that 24-hour broadcast, we learned that if we started at, say, 10 o'clock in the morning, it really made that second day a lot easier to face. When the sun's coming up and you realize you still have 8 more hours of broadcasting to do, it can be a little daunting, especially when you're very, very tired, as I usually was during Issues, Etc. 24. When did we start that? When did we stop it?
I know it looks like we stopped it in 2015.
That seems right.
That seems about right.
It was usually held in November.
And it looks like we started it. Let me see here.
Sounds feels to me like it was right around 2010 when we started it.
That doesn't say a date on here. I have no idea. I don't know.
We did it for four or five years.
I think 4 years. So maybe 2011? I don't know.
And it was just an idea that we had. I believe Jeff had this idea. He has most of the ideas around here.
Only the dumb ones.
And at first, it just sounded like such a great idea, didn't it? I mean, it was just, wow. A 24/7 broadcast, we'd break it up into two-hour chunks with different guests over the course of 24 hours, so 12 guests there. All through the night, we would get guests in real time. We didn't pre-record, at first, we did not pre-record any of it because it was supposed to be a live 24-hour broadcast. And so we had the benefit there of getting, say, John Kleinig live, which is very difficult to do since he lives on the other side of the planet. And his clock is exact, along with his seasons, are exactly the opposite of what we experience here in the United States. So we'd get the chance to talk to him live. Listeners stayed with us. The truly, truly diehard listeners tried to stay with us. But I don't think anybody stayed with us the entire time. But the benefit of it was that we would then have 12 two-hour shows that we had there that we could immediately give to our listeners. And they could not only listen live, they could listen on demand. So we also did it to raise some money. I think we were always asking for money in the course of the breaks that we took there. But I'll speak only for myself, Jeff. I don't know what finally, I'll just put it this way. After every single Issues, Etc. 24, I went home and told my wife, I'm not doing that again next year. Of course, I'm not the boss around here, so that's really not my decision to make. Because I would just be a zombie after that for about a day and a half, at least. The human person is not built to stay up, much less to interview people live on the radio over the course of 24 hours without a break. Now, in the latter years, I think we actually did have Dr. Ken Sherb come in during the what would they call it, the graveyard shift?
Yeah, that would be what, like the...
He'd come until like a 11 till 3 or 11 till 4, something like that. I can't remember when he'd come in.
Yeah, I think he did like 1 to 5 or something like that.
So in those latter years, because I just was getting too old to stay up that late, and Ken was kind enough to come in and do the night shift. So we were still technically doing 24 hours of live broadcasting. It just wasn't with the same host. That may have never been a reasonable idea. So Ken was very nice to do that. But then I can't remember. I mean, Jeff eventually just decided we were getting too old for this, right? Isn't that?
I think part of the reason too is it originally ran in the spring and then it was in November, but now we've had these two November conferences, which we simply, it takes a lot of time to get 12 guests minimum to come on.
Oh, it was for months long project
consecutive hours, yeah. And try to pull off a conference that had something to do with it. I'm looking here, but it appears that our first one was in, let's see, 2010, and we did it through 2015. And any ideas on who the very first Issues Etc. 24 guest was?
Oh my goodness, I have no idea. I mean, when you got to get 12 guests, you're beating the bushes. We always got excellent guests, and we had a theme, or we go through a book of the Bible, or what do? We went through books of the Bible. We went through. I can't.
We did like systematics, you know,
topics,
original sin.
And we would do these.
We did the Psalms, like Craig said. We did Psalms one year. We did
all the different kinds of Psalms.
But the very first one, now you're wrong, because you remember when we were fired by the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod during Holy Week of 2008 by the previous president of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, one Gerald, what's his middle initial, Kieschnick?
I can't remember. No idea.
Anyway. We were on another station here in St. Louis buying the airtime, we buy the airtime now at KFUO, we were buying it on another station in St. Louis, and we had just the second hour on 4 o'clock, so we started that at 4 o'clock in the afternoon and had to make it to 4 o'clock
the next day
on Saturday. That was torture. Dr. Arthur Jess was the first guest on Luke, by the way.
There's just a psychological and emotional barrier that you hit when you've been broadcasting for 12 hours. And you realize you've got another 12 to go, and the sun has not yet come up. I can't even imagine why we thought it would be a good idea. But I distinctly remember the first time we talked about it, saying that's a really, really good idea, and actually believing it until I did it the first time.
And we still talk about it. It's still on our meeting agenda about possibly doing it in the future. It does require a lot of effort. A lot of scheduling, a lot of things can go wrong with it. And I can tell you this, if we do two conferences, there's no way we can do Issues Etc. 24. We just simply don't have the staff to do two national conferences. In addition to what we do every week here, every day here, and have a 24-hour live continuous broadcast.
And to be quite honest, the live listenership, even for the regular program, is not that great. They're great people, but it's not that great of a number. And so the live listenership of a 24-hour continuous live radio broadcast, as you can imagine, was not really good right around 2 or 3 in the morning. It wasn't. But we weren't really doing it for the live listener. That was kind of the gimmick part of it. We were doing it for the on-demand listeners who really did enjoy listening to 24/7. Now, I think I can just tell you that I have more lack of memory of Issues Etc. 24 than I have of memory. Because at some point, your brain just stops writing short-term memory, especially when you're dozing off. And I'm not joking, when you're dozing off between each question. And what I found I had to do was write down all my questions and be very careful about how I made sure I would cross them off when I would ask them, because I would be so tired so unable to process the guest's answers that if I didn't know what I was going to ask next, I would just sit there and mumble incoherently. I'm just not good when I'm that tired, and it's even worse now. So, look, picture Wilkin going home. This is a Friday night in the Wilkin house. I leave here. I go home. My wife and I will go out to eat. Okay, I might have, I generally don't drink in public, but I might have one drink at dinner, and then we go home. I sit down. I kick the recliner up. And the next thing I know, it's 11:30. And my wife says, "You have been snoring so loud, I couldn't even hear the television." And I haven't walked the dogs. I haven't fed the dogs. I haven't done anything. That's just a Friday night. That's the swinging night at the Wilkin house. you can only imagine what Monday night looks like. So issues at Center 24 is maybe a physical impossibility for Wilkin at this point. I don't think I could do it.
I think Ken Sherbert would probably do at least half those hours for
I'm
you.
I'm sure he would be happy to do half those hours.
The dynamic duo, reunited.
I'm sure he would be happy to do this half those hours. You know what I did during those hours?
You went in their truck and slept.
That's right. I've got it's not a crew cab. What do they call it? A plus cab on my pickup truck. So I have a big bench seat at the back of my pickup truck, which I curled up and went to sleep.
Quick question, Anthony, listen to South Carolina. You guys have any idea what weekend the next Making the Case conference will be? I'd like to plan ahead for the vacation calendar at work. Thanks for listening in South Carolina.
That's an Anthony. Excellent question.
We're thinking it's usually the weekend before Father's Day. So I think that's Friday, June 7th and Saturday, June 8th. That's the tentative. Those are the tentative dates for issues, etc.
Do not write it in stone, and please don't buy your airplane tickets yet because it might change. But plan to attend. It depends largely on, first and foremost, a venue, and second, availability of guests. We really do. We like to bring in the absolute best guests that we possibly can for issues, et cetera, conferences. And that means, and I'm not exaggerating, that means scheduling them at least a year in advance. And usually we're kind of late when we contact someone's people and they say, well, you're late. We could schedule maybe you for 2020, but not for 2019, because we want to bring in the absolute best guests that we can for our listeners. And so it'll be based upon the availability of guests and availability of venue. We don't know where it's going to be, and we don't know exactly when it's going to be yet, but it will be. We will have a summer conference, no doubt about it.
How about one last comment?
Hello, my name is Jim, and I'm calling from Connecticut, and I just wanted to say what Issues Etc. means to me. In a word, it means hope, because you good people are so faithful in proclaiming Christ crucified for the forgiveness of sins, Christ for you, which is becoming increasingly more needful with the passing of each and every day. Christians are desperate for hope, as are non-Christians, and this particular Christian who wrestles daily with ongoing sin needs to be reminded that despite that, Christ has died for me, and because of that, I'm reconciled to the Father, and now I'm free to serve others in love. And I look to you, good people, to hear that message each and every day. So, Todd, thank you very, very much, and everyone else who is associated with Issues, etc., thank you so very, very much, and may God bless each and every one of you richly. Thank you.
Thank you. That is exactly why we do what we do, because we are sinners too. We know exactly what it is to live in this ongoing struggle against and with our sinfulness and with our sin and temptation, and the desperate need that we have each and every day to be truly consoled in the middle of that struggle by the only thing that gives consolation, the only thing that gives hope, and that is the perfect obedience of Jesus Christ on our behalf. That when he came into this world, he came to fulfill the law for us, to keep the law for us, and to be our substitute in obedience to that law on the cross. So that now we have as our substitute before God the perfect righteousness of Jesus Christ. Christ himself is our substitute. If this were not true, that struggle with sin would be hopeless. It would not be worth struggling against sin. And if this were not true, we would have no hope of then hearing that good word of God's law again in our lives and saying, you know what? This law now shows me what true Christian freedom looks like. This shows me what it is to be free to serve my neighbor in absolute love and Christian freedom. It all hinges right there on the perfect obedience of Jesus all the way to his death on the cross. When we come back, hopefully more of that will come through as we play Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week. We'll be playing those four soundbites, and once we've played them, it'll be your turn to vote and give us a call. 1-877-623-6943. Stay tuned. Hey, my life, call me. 'Twas the night before Jesus, when all through the earth every creature was stirring for a new baby's birth. Words from The Night Before Jesus, Concordia Publishing House's new Christmas book. The Night Before Jesus would make a great Christmas gift for children, grandchildren, and godchildren ages 3 through 5. Browse before you buy at IssuesETC.org or call 1-800-325-3040. The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for December, The Night Before Jesus.
The Lutheran Church Missouri Synod celebrates and affirms life from the time of conception until natural death, and every time in between. For this reason, LCMS Life Ministry is a program singularly devoted to upholding the sanctity of human life, both in our church body and the culture at large. Life Ministry provides educational materials, hosts conferences, and works closely with allies such as Lutherans for Life. For more information, visit lcms.org/life and follow LCMS Life Ministry on Facebook.
We're churchmen, not company men. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Many Lutheran pastors outside of the U.S. receive little or no seminary education. Luther Academy provides theological triage through conferences, books, and journals. Help support Luther Academy by making a tax-deductible donation at lutheracademy.com or call 260-452-2211. Serving Lutheran pastors to the ends of the earth. Luther Academy, 260-452-2211 or lutheracademy.com.